Hello and welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told, and it is so good to have you back on now episode 3 of the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. Today I sit down with my friend Patty Walters of the band As It Is. Now, some of you might not know this band because they are a pretty new band. They just released their first record, but you're going to know about them a lot in a very short time. I am convinced that this band is going to be the next big thing. the first question I ask them is pretty ridiculous, and I can't wait to jump into it. But first, some news, some big Silverstein news, actually. If you're listening from Canada, Silverstein is coming across Canada next year on a great tour with Being as an Ocean, Amorosa, this awesome new band called Rarity. It's on Rise Records. You guys got to check them out. And that's super, super huge news. And right now, if you guys are in the U.S., we are also on tour with Senses Fail, a co-headlining tour, and we're having so much fun right now. We're just a couple weeks in. So if you haven't got your tickets for that yet, make sure you check out soundrink.com. They are not only the sponsor of the show, but they are also someone that Silverstein has been working with on our ticket links and our VIPs and everything for quite some time, and they do such an awesome job. So go over to soundrink.com, take a look at the VIP packages. There's still a few things left there, and they have just regular ticket links too as well if you just want to come for general admission or whatever it is. So it's a great tour, not to be missed, so we'll see you there. Also, don't forget, if you live in Toronto or the greater Toronto area, the GTA as we call it, make sure you check out Stay Warm Festival. It's on December 20th. Silverstein, we've put it together. We're headlining, and we've got some great bands coming as well. We've got Cancer Bats, Beartooth, Seaway, and also we have Capsize, who is out with us on Senses Fail Tour right now. Such a great lineup, so please actually go over to SoundRink. They have the VIP and the ticket links right there at soundrink.com. You should be able to find it pretty easily. Great website. So we'll see you at Stay Warm Festival 2015, December 20th, at the Danforth Music Hall. And as for show news, man, this podcast has been like popping off already. And I mean, I had no idea this many people were going to be so like stoked on it. And I mean, the hate line is not buzzing. I'm a little bit bummed. The hate line, 657-666-HATE. You got to give me a call. Leave some messages for me. I want to hear your hate. Really let me have it this time. I got a couple. They were kind of weak sauce. And they started out like with some, you know, violent message, and then at the end it was like, I'm just kidding, I love you, buddy. No, I don't want that. I want the real sickness. Give it to me. But please keep those show recommendations coming too, because I've had so many great recommendations, and now I'm working with my producer Nick, and we're trying to get all these people on the show, and it just seems so cool. Like, all these people are like, oh my God, your show is so good. And I'm like, I don't know, I just started doing some interviews. So it's so great. So please continue to hit me up. Leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com is the email address. And be sure to get on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We got all those as well. So let's get this going. As It Is, they've been together since 2012. They're from Brighton, England. They are on Fearless Records. the first thing you're probably going to think is, wait, I thought you said that they were an English band. How come this dude doesn't have an English accent? And it's kind of funny. He was actually born in Minnesota, USA, and moved to England at a young age. And I guess he just never picked up the English accent. So, it's a little funny when he uses British slang and British terms, and you're like, dude, you sound like a Yankee. But it was a great interview, and I had a lot of fun talking to him. And it's very interesting how he started out as a kid, basically didn't have anyone committed to a band, and started a YouTube channel and became super, super popular on there, doing covers, filming his own stuff, recording his own stuff, producing his own covers on YouTube, and it became such a huge thing. He still has a huge following on YouTube. So I ask him about that, and we talk about a whole bunch of great stuff, and we tell some great tour stories at the end. So have a listen to my interview with Patty Walters from the band As It Is. Am I closet? You never want it. Or is it press a lot that you forgot it? How does it feel to be the new heartthrob of pop punk?
It feels good. That's also.
So you're taking that?
That's
you're
like
taking
a, that and it's like a synonym for how does it feel to be forgotten in the next 5 years?
Oh shit! I like how you turned that around and made it all self-deprecating.
Pessimistic, yeah.
Yes. No, but seriously, like, you know, I guess some people listening to this probably won't be super familiar with your band because you guys are a new band.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is not only because I really believe in your band, and I think like when this airs, whenever it airs, you guys are going to be fucking blowing up and massive and selling at stadiums all across the world. That's one reason, but also I just think the way, you know, your career path has gone is actually really, really unique, because there hasn't really been anyone from kind of this generation that has done what you've done.
Sure.
Really. And I guess kind of tell the people what I mean.
The YouTube days?
Yeah.
So when I was seven, like I've been in bands since I was, you know, about 11 or 12 years old. And when I was 17, I found myself without a band, and MySpace was, you know, totally crashing and burning at the time. So I turned to YouTube as, you know, a platform to put my music out there. And I posted covers on YouTube for about 5 or 6 years before and during our band's operation, and found a lot of success in doing it, and created a lot of opportunities for myself and our band in doing so. And it's something I've now been able to leave in the past because the band has been thriving so very, very much in the last year or two. But it was, yeah, it was a huge, integral, and important part of my life.
So are you because you're a great singer, obviously, and that's what you're doing and as it is, but, you know, watching your videos, like, you're playing everything, you know, you're playing guitar, bass, drums, which you seem like you're pretty adequate at all these instruments. What did you play? A bunch of different bands, a bunch of different instruments?
I did. Yeah. I started taking lessons on guitar and drums when I was 12. And I've only recently had singing lessons. I didn't learn bass or piano. I've just kind of taught myself that. But a lot of it was just kind of just practicing, and playing in bands on as many instruments as I could.
So how did you find yourself without a band? Just other people crapping out, or
you know how it is. Just people that didn't care as much as I did weren't as devoted to being in a band or that specific band. And I was really, really passionate about it. I'm straight edge. I lost a lot of my friends because they wanted to party and stuff, and I wasn't into that when I was 15 and 16. And that meant I was also becoming more introverted and turned more focused on practicing and, you know, my music. And
so in a way, doing solo, like a solo band, and having these solo things was good for kind of your personality at that time, I guess.
Most definitely, yeah.
So now, do you think it's different because you're a little bit older? And now, I mean, you've kind of said you're dropping the YouTube thing completely. Is that true?
Yeah, it's gone.
It's in the past.
It's been over a year now since I've posted to YouTube.
So now I guess maybe you're a little more confident, and that's why you decided, hey, let's start it up with another band. Or was it kind of part to do with how your popularity from the YouTube, you felt like you could channel that into a successful band? Like, what made you make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it had been maybe 3 years since I'd performed live, and I was really, really missing it. And I posted an ad on a site called joinmyband.co.uk looking for people to start a pop punk band with. I just, you know, cited some influences, and Andy, our lead guitarist, is who replied to that.
Skinny Mini.
Yeah, that's him indeed.
That's what I call him.
Yeah, and then we found Foley as well through the same site, and you know, we started that in 2012, and that was before, you know, my YouTube was, you know, moderately successful. And, you know, that we just kind of came up at the same time. It was very interesting because they were totally separate entities. You know, YouTube was all about covers, and the band was all about the band and playing club shows to nobody.
That's a good point. Yeah. So when you were doing all these covers and stuff, were you ever tempted to throw up an original tune? Did you ever do that on YouTube?
I never did. No.
Was it because you were scared, or was that just not the focus of what you were doing?
It wasn't the focus of what I was doing. It was at first. You know, I had acoustic projects and stuff, and then I found so much more joy in just, you know, covering a song every week and meeting that deadline and, you know, making people happy. That was the thing. It's just seeing the instant gratification of the comments was hugely validating as well.
But there must have been also a certain thing, you know, it becomes such a numbers game
for sure
when you're talking about not just YouTube, but all social media. And people will downplay that. Like people, oh, I don't care how many followers I have. And, you know, people will downplay that. But on things like YouTube, especially because YouTube generates money, mm-hmm. which I kind of want to ask you about in a minute, but those numbers, and they keep rising, and you put a new cover up, and every week more and more people are coming, and you have more and more subscribers to your channel. Like, that must have been feeding your, not only your ego, but also like your, maybe your wallet up to a point too.
Completely. At some point. Yeah. And I won't deny that, like, the numbers game is and was still very much on my mind. I mean, I see that my tweets don't get as many retweets or favorites as they did a year ago. And, you know, like, that's not like maybe like a tough pill to swallow or something.
It's just because some of the YouTube fans have sort of, I mean, I don't want to say forgotten about
just
you,
lost interest in the in that way, because I'm not, you know, that part of their life, you know. And in some ways, I see that as a regression. But mm-hmm. I'm also much happier than I've ever been, and much feeling so much more fulfilled. So in that way, that's a progression. But, you know, the numbers game is still something very much on my mind, and something that occupies a lot of my thoughts and anxieties. But you know, for the most part, I'm just enjoying what we're doing, I suppose.
Right. So I guess you would feel, I mean, I guess it must be hard when you're, okay, you put up a new video and you're like, holy shit, I got 1 million plays. And then you kind of like look around and it's like, I have no one to celebrate this with.
Yes, yeah.
Is that like, was it kind of a lonely existence? Is that part of what?
It definitely was. Yeah. At times it definitely was. There would be like all nighters where I'd just really focus on getting a video finished and uploaded, and you mm-hmm. know, I'd keep to myself a lot.
Did you
lot.
Start feeling a little ridiculous too?
I felt a bit, little bit
to
like
Patty playing the bass. Oh, cut to Patty playing the drums. Like, yeah. Did that feel a little like?
I felt like YouTube's Brian Wilson. I was just like a hermit, just really working very pedantically on some of these things.
So why the choice to drop YouTube completely? You didn't feel like you could kind of do both things? Or do you think that, I mean, and if you kept going, do you think it would help your band too?
It's very possible. And I've had a lot of people ask me and really like question me and try to encourage me otherwise. But the fact is, you know, I started posting covers online to be even, you know, half of where this band is today. And, you know, the opportunity to sign to Fearless Records and, you know, to have managers and booking agents like we do, that's exactly the core reason that I started doing it in the first place. So it seemed like an appropriate place to end that chapter and give this, where I hoped I'd be, 100%. Because that's what I very much like doing. I like giving 100% to like one thing. And it would have felt very weird and possibly wrong to be, you know, picking and choosing what goes to where, because there's a lot of creating for YouTube, and there was a lot of creating for the band. And it came to that deciding point where I had to, you know, choose the band over YouTube.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit, well, you mentioned already you're straight edge.
Yes.
And that, I guess, you were a kid and you never like, you know, felt the need to,
I'm not really sure as to why I had such a disinterest towards it. But I'd be at either parties, or like people would be like drinking in a park and like smoking cigarettes. I'm like, I'm just, it's not for me. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's great that it's for you, but it's not for me. So I was never a part of it. And in turn, like I said, you know, I made and lost a lot of friends in doing that. And then I befriended a guy named Jimmy. He played bass in a band called Your Demise, and he introduced mm-hmm. me to straight edge culture, because I knew what the term meant, and I didn't know that there was, you know, this huge movement.
So for you, it was, you were abstinent from drinking and smoking and all that stuff, and that was more important than saying I'm straight edge. Like, you didn't even know what it was.
Absolutely. Yeah, I knew it was a term, mm-hmm. but I didn't really know the specifics or the, you know, why that term came into existence, and the music and the movement.
So you learned about the history of Minor Threat.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah, very much. You were just admiring my judge patch on my backpack.
Great. Yeah, you got, let me look at your bag here.
He's got Gorilla Biscuits.
Today, Misfits, Gorilla Biscuits, Judge, The Exploited. I don't know if they're a straight edge band.
They, no. No, not them.
But yeah, you got all this. So like,
there's a few.
And it's always, I always see you like walking around. You're wearing a My Chemical Romance shirt right now. You're such a band shirt guy.
I'm very much a band shirt guy.
What's that about?
It's just kind of, I was always the band shirt guy. I used to go to so many shows when I was younger, and I'd always buy a shirt most of the time when I was at a gig, and that would just replace another shirt. And I don't know.
You must have an awesome collection.
I have a pretty good collection. Yeah. Yeah. It's like 70 to 80% black band t-shirts. And
cool. Yeah. So I know you, I know it's like beaten to death how you're a UK guy, but you have an American accent, and it's because you were born in Minnesota and you went to the UK when you were five or something.
That's right. Yeah.
But what I'm more interested in is how like music, you know, took over your life, specifically like we're talking about hardcore bands and straight edge hardcore bands. Like when did you discover all that? And what was the kind of path of music to where, kind of where it sits today?
Yeah, like I discovered alternative music through music videos, specifically like Kerrang TV, through like Blink-182 and Green Day and Sum 41 and Newfound Glory and stuff. And but I remember watching home movies of myself when I was 3 or 4, and I'm just like playing this toy guitar, leaping off the couch and doing like these solos on my knees and stuff. And it's funny because I don't know if that's something I'd ever really saw and, you know, impressioned on me at that age. It was just, I've always just enjoyed music and enjoyed the attention of performing very, very much. But I discovered alternative music when I was maybe 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And through that, you know, new metal was thriving at that time. So like Limp Bizkit and Slipknot. And through that found, you know, everything.
Yeah. But I mean, I like to ask specifically about like punk rock and hardcore because there's something different about it. You know, I mean, unless for you, it wasn't different. Was there a moment when you were like, I want to be like in a pop punk band or I want to be in a hardcore band or whatever. It was different. I always feel like that's different than saying, oh yeah, I just like alternative music on the radio. And then I found myself with a Judge patch on my bag.
Sure.
You know, there's gotta be something that clicked there.
I don't know. I'm not sure if it was any different, if I'm completely honest.
Like, why did you buy your first guitar? Why? What band compelled you to buy a guitar?
That was definitely Blink-182. My second electric guitar, because we got like a cheap Yamaha. Mm-hmm. That was like maybe like 80 pounds or something. And then I got like a Fender Strat, like a red Fender Strat, which I still to this day have.
Is it the one with the black pickguard?
That's the one.
You know what? I have the same color red Strat with a black pickguard. Is that an American one?
Yeah, American Highway 1 Strat.
Okay, mine's an American Standard from like 94 or something, but it's funny because I had a white pickguard and I replaced it with a black pickguard. Mine it's got to be the same color as yours.
Yeah.
So when I saw you playing in one of your videos, I was like, that's crazy. We got the same guitar.
Yeah, I swapped the white pickguard out for
nice,
a black one.
Man. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about singing too, because this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast.
Yes.
And first thing I want to ask you is, how's your Lead Singer Syndrome doing?
It's doing
Did you carry any gear today?
I did. Yeah.
This
is the thing is that this tour specifically is the first US tour where we've had no crew whatsoever. On our first one, we had a driver. On Warped Tour, we had a driver, a tour manager, and a merch guy. And on this tour, we have nobody except the five of us in our band. So we're driving ourselves.
Is it weird driving on the wrong side of the road?
I'm quite used to it.
Okay.
I'm finding the trailer much weirder than the other
sucks.
Side of the road.
Do you have a guy in the band that's the expert at backing up?
Foley.
Yeah, I get that vibe from him. I feel like he would be good at that.
Yeah, he's very good at that.
A real like man's man, I think.
Yeah, honestly, if he were to do any other job besides be a drummer, he would drive trucks. He's, you know, confessed that. He would love to be a truck driver.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. So okay, so you're really pulling your weight as the lead singer.
Yeah.
You've been on the tour for what, 7 days now?
Yeah.
Voice holding up okay?
It is holding up okay. It's always the first, it's the second, third, and fourth days that my body aches everywhere from getting back
into the
swing.
Hangover.
It is. It's just the whiplash in my neck and just the weird pulled muscles all down my back and legs. But that's all good now. Yeah. We're feeling all right.
Cool. So, generally on tour, are you pretty healthy? And
I try
to
be.
Your voice ever?
There's a few too many Taco Bells. There's a few too many like crisps bought at 7-Elevens and stuff.
We call them potato chips here.
You do. This is correct. Yeah, a few too many like Doritos. But I had two bananas for breakfast today.
Nice.
I had some like big falafel wrap with like some veggie stuffed in it. Yeah, I'm taking those vitamins that you saw in my toiletry bag, some B12, some vitamin C.
Well, yeah, vegan, you need the, you're vegan too, right?
Yes, I am.
We didn't talk about that yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need the B12 supplements.
I only just found out what B12 actually does for your body. So it's basically you need lots of B12 and iron when you're a vegan because you don't get as much iron because you're not eating meat. B12 is what makes it. It allows your body to break down iron. So if you were eating all the iron in the world as a vegan, if you don't have enough B12, it can't break it down as a nutrient to like give your body sustenance.
You know what? I didn't know that.
So I just learned that recently because I was feeling really unwell.
Because I was vegan for 3 years.
Oh, yeah?
I'm vegetarian still, but I was vegan for 3 years. And yeah, I always heard you got to have B12. You got to have B12. So I took supplements and I would drink like soy milk with B12 in it and stuff like that. But all I knew was that if you didn't have B12, basically you were going to die.
You were like a day away from anemia.
You're going to die, like straight up death.
Yeah.
So, so I don't know, man. But that's good. You're staying healthy on tour. I mean, that's fucking awesome. So with you guys, like you guys' band is so interesting because your persona like is half like I'm a kind of like straight edge vegan hardcore dude, and then half like I'm a singer of a boy band.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that.
Do you actually, like, are you accepting that?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because I don't mean to throw that at you as an insult.
No,
but like, you know, you're a good-looking dude and you have a personality that's very like, hi, I'm Patty. Like,
for
you're very
sure.
friendly.
Of course.
You don't come off as like this tough, like, guy, really.
Yeah.
You know, when on stage, I mean, sometimes, you know, you get like, you do a little bit of screaming here and there and stuff. But like, what is like the fan reaction to that? Like, you must have so many young fans. Is that like kind of weird for you? Like, Or is that cool? Are you just like totally cool with having like 13-year-old girls kind of like
trying to
relate to what you're saying? And is that what you're trying to appeal to?
I think.
Or are you kind of bummed? Sorry to interrupt. But
no, you're fine.
Are you kind of bummed that like hardcore dudes aren't into it as much?
Yeah, not at all. I think what's cool about our demographic being predominantly younger is that's when I discovered this genre, when I was around that age. I did slightly earlier. But, you know... You know, what excites me about bands like 5 Seconds of Summer breaking into the mainstream is that it's very possible that kids that would, instead of discovering One Direction, are going to discover Five Sauce and through that discover pop punk.
What
and
did you just call them?
Five Sauce.
That's people say that?
That's their like abbreviated, yeah.
Never heard that before.
Five Sauce. And then and maybe they'll discover pop punk and then maybe discover like hardcore and... you know, full circle.
That's like, sounds like something you'd put on like a Five Guys burger.
Hey, yeah, some five sauce.
Can I get a five, get number two combo, extra five sauce. No, man, I hear what you're saying. And I like definitely think that those bands do open up like, you know, the gateway and I'm sure, you know, I was outside, you know, we're in Toronto right now and you guys are opening for Mayday Parade. There's so many people outside.
Like, oh, no
and,
way.
You know, and you know, Mayday Parade, they've been around a long time, you know, but yeah. I wonder how many of these fans, very young fans, are like they maybe got into Five Sauce or One Direction or those bands.
Sure.
And now they've been like, okay, we've listened to those bands for a little while, but now what are the real fucking bands? Like, I'm a little older. Oh, Mayday Parade, like, you know, and As It Is and Real Friends and all these other, you know, pop punk bands. So yeah. I think that is important.
For sure. For sure. And I think what's a little bit funny and a little bit of a contradiction about, you know, when you, want to pick and choose your demographic. Like we don't care about being cool. We just like doing what we do and we have a good time doing it. And you know, there's integrity in our music. But we're not concerned about being cool. And I think some of the time you'll have, genres or, you know, bands with a specific style or niche that will seem like they're trying not to be cool, and that in itself is potentially trying to be cooler than we're trying to be cool. We're not really concerned at all, even slightly, you know.
I call it the we don't care so much.
Yeah,
that's what it is, right?
It's not caring to the extent that it becomes your image and your fashion, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a good point. So you guys really just don't care about credibility.
We couldn't give a fucking shit. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Of course you're allowed to.
Okay, I'm just
go on for a while.
I'm just
sing the Blink song where all they do is swear. I'm sure that was a favorite of yours when you were 9.
How's that go? Shit, piss, cock, fuck, cocksucker, motherfucker, tits, turd, and twat.
In the aquarium.
There you go. That's the whole song, isn't it?
Yeah, they repeat it a few times, and that's man. So okay, well, speaking of credibility, when you did your last record, you guys went to Florida and you worked with a very credible producer.
Yeah.
James Paul Wisner. Is that how you say his name? Wisner?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And how was working with him?
It was great.
Because he did the most famous record he did was their only Chasing Safety Under Oath record, which is, at this point, I mean, it's definitely a classic.
Yeah.
So how was that experience?
It was incredible. And he's worked with Dashboard Confessional, which was a huge influence for me specifically. He also did, what is it? Almost Here by The Academy Is, mm-hmm. which is one of mine and Ben's favorite records as well. So he's done not only a lot of records that we really admire, but a lot of records that inspire the kind of nostalgic sound that we aim for, that more kind of drive-through records era pop punk emo style. So it was very important that we worked with somebody who understood the mentality and the real sound of what we were trying to emulate. I don't know if emulate's quite the right word, but I'm going to go with it.
Well, what you were influenced by.
For sure.
What the influence of the band is, sure.
Yeah. But at the same time, we wanted somebody that was, you know, both a strong producer and engineer. And some of his recent records, like his work with Hands Like Houses, is great. And we went with him for 5.5 weeks. And it was our first record. So it was all just, you know, kind of learning as we went along.
But you must have some recording experience yourself. Like all those covers you did on YouTube, like they all sound really good.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
And you must have engineered, you might have recorded the whole thing yourself, right?
I did, yeah, yeah. I think that's part of it as well, is I had to learn to step away from, you know, like clicking the mouse and doing all the tweaking of the knobs and the engineering, because when we came into the studio, we had demos that we'd, you know, done in pre-production, to the extent where we like really crafted the delays and the tremolos and stuff. So by the time we got there, it was really difficult to part ways with, you know, what we came to know the song to be, to the extent where some of them had to stay, like some of the effects became part of the song. We felt a bit pedantic at times, but at the same time, like that's the record that we wrote and wanted to leave the studio with.
And what part of Florida is the studio?
St. Cloud, Florida.
St. Cloud?
Yeah.
No clouds in St. Cloud?
Uh-uh. We were staying in Kissimmee, Florida.
Uh-huh. Orlando area?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cool. Did you guys like it? I mean, I know you've been to the U.S. obviously a lot, being born there, and I know you go back to visit family, but what about the other guys in your band?
We loved it because it was early October and it was starting to get very overcast and cold in the UK. And mm-hmm. then we came out to Florida, and Fearless put us up in this vacation house with a rental car, and it was great.
Like
it was amazing
paradise.
Of them.
Yeah.
And we were just kind of tanning by the pool and when we got back from the studio. It was great. It was very, very cool.
That reminds me a little bit of when we made our second record. We went to California to do it.
Yeah.
And we were in Orange County.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the same thing. It was wintertime. And we went to California. It was this is the best. And it can actually be kind of inspiring.
It must definitely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Did you guys have it pretty much all written, or did you do some writing there too?
We really did have it pretty much all written. It was about 95% written. There were just a few lyrics to be finished and maybe some transitions and kind of intros to songs that weren't concrete. It was written for the most part.
And vocally, that was the first time you've worked with a real ass producer.
Yes.
Was that different for you, or was it about what you expected?
I'm not sure. It was both different and what I expected at times. Ben and I went and got 6 singing lessons before we entered the studio, and that was integral. It was so necessary.
You got singing lessons?
Yeah. Yeah.
In Florida?
Before we left. Before we left.
Okay.
In the UK with a woman named Stevie Van Lang, who's incredible. There's a band called Marmosets, the singer of Marmosets, Becca, she's been trained by her as well. And she was great, but she understands that we need to be aggressive in our music, and she just teaches us how to do it safely. She's not abandon the gritty and the screaming stuff.
So she teaches things like warm-ups.
Yes.
And breathing and things like that.
Yeah, and how to sing certain melodies so that they sound the best and they're easier on our voice, because a lot of them are very high up, like the top of my range.
Right.
Recording vocals was the thing that pleasantly surprised me about recording vocals was that we would do guitars in the morning and vocals at night, so that we weren't just doing solid days of vocals, because that was a big fear of mine, was that I was going to lose my voice.
That's the way
studio.
We do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way you almost have to do it, is do guitars in the morning. Cause I mean, let's face it. You can't fucking sing when you wake up.
No,
it's just not going to happen.
No.
So, you know, like for me, I wake up, like, let's say I wake up in the, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Let's say you start guitars at like 10,
mm-hmm.
then I'm like, maybe I can start singing around like one or two at my best. But
yeah.
Some people like really like to work late in the night.
Yeah.
Is that how you were doing? Or
I'm
was it?
Very much one of those people.
Yeah.
I operate very nocturnally. the later, the better, really. So yeah, we'd start recording vocals around maybe 6 or 7 PM. And I'd do those for about 2 to 3 hours. The longest session I did was 4 hours, and that was starting to really strain my voice. And then we took the next day off, but then I was fine again.
Yeah, that's we did that on our second record, and in our third record we worked with Mark Trombino, who as a Drive Thru Records fan, you must
of course,
you know, worship the ground he walks on, and I really did too.
Yeah.
And I don't want to throw him under the bus too much, but we didn't have the best experience with him. And part of the reason that it really bummed me out so much was he didn't want to work like that. He wanted to do full days of vocals.
Sure.
I was like,
sure.
Dude, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I just can't. Oh, you want me to sing from, you know, 12 noon to 12 AM? Like, forget about it.
Yeah.
And like he nearly killed me, dude. It was like horrible.
It's just such a strenuous process on your on your instrument.
You're
like,
it is.
It's your body, you know?
So how many days did you spend recording vocals?
It
or
must
it's hard
have
to
been,
tell, I guess, if you're doing half days, but...
I guess, well, we spent the first 3 days on drums. Oh, goodness. First 3 days on drums and 2 days on bass, and we were there for 5.5 weeks, so it was kind of the remaining time.
So a lot of time on vocals.
Yeah, a lot of time. A lot of time on vocals and guitars, yeah.
Do you sing your own harmonies, too, or do you have...
I did on this record, yeah.
Do you write them too, or does the producer write them on a keyboard for you? Or
they were written, and we like tweaked a few things.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, they were all part of the pre-production before we went to the studio. Mine and Ben's as well.
That's good. You guys are very prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
I write. I like what I do when I do my vocals is I get in the booth and I have like the, you know, the main melodies for the songs, and sometimes they'll change, right?
Sure.
Because like, you know,
yeah,
you don't want to plan it too much.
Yeah.
And then I actually figure out the melody on a guitar, and then I figure out the harmony on the guitar, and I sing all the harmonies.
Yeah, sure.
So I know I'm a bit different, but yeah, I was wondering how people do harmonies.
We're very neurotic songwriters. Like we really work on a song until it's like we can decide definitively like this song is done, and we'll play around with all the intricate and neurotic things until that point.
Do you ever find when you you write a song and it's a certain way, and then you change it around and you change it around and you change it around, and then next thing you know, it's exactly the original way
right?
that you wrote it.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that amazing how often that happens?
Someone will be playing like this lead line. It's like, oh, that's not quite right. Then you'll try about like 8 or 9 more and you're like, oh, that sounds great. It was like, that's the first thing I played.
Yeah.
And you've just, like, you've either compromised or you've just entered a new state of mind where you think that's good. But that happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's the classic too, is like in the studio with like a guitar amp, right? You know, I don't know how you guys are for guitar amps, and you're a guitar player. Did you play guitar on the record at all?
I played rhythm guitar, yeah.
Yeah, I play a lot of guitar on our records too, and I always like, I hear a sound and I'm like, oh no, it's like, that's too clean or that's too much gain, and then we adjust it and then I'm like, oh, that's perfect. And it's exactly the first one, you know,
right
away the same. It's like, oh man, like your ears can really play tricks on you.
I love when I'm like playing with an EQ or playing with just any kind of plugin and I'm tweaking all these things and hearing a difference. And then I realize it's been on bypass the whole time. And, like my brain's just like changing how it sounds, my perception of it. But
that's amazing.
It really just hasn't changed at all.
That's amazing, man.
Happens all the time.
So I want to talk a little bit about Warped Tour.
Yeah.
Which for you guys, you know, being an English band and doing probably like maximum of 2-3 week tours,
mm-hmm.
With what driving like a maximum of in England of like 3 hours,
yeah.
maybe 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Mainland Europe can be far drives, but how is that going into that Warped Tour where it's like there's a stretch of 12 shows in a row?
Oh yeah, that was hard work.
Crazy climate change. It's hot as fuck,
mm-hmm.
and you're driving like, well, I guess you guys were in a bandwagon, weren't you?
We were in a bus, actually.
Oh, a bus. Okay.
Yeah.
But how was that experience for you?
It was great at times and the worst at times. Is I think that's just the way with Warped Tour. But
it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
It was it was super fun. A lot of the time it was really luxurious. Like I said, we had a bus, so we had like a fridge and a bathroom on our vehicle for the first time, which was super cool. But like the heat and the weather, I mean, like the storms in Florida were really yeah. hard work. And you know, we were hustling the lines every morning to sell our albums, and we were doing like Ben and I were doing TEI classes, which I know you and some of the band did as well. And it was very full on getting used to the finding out what time you're doing anything at 10:30 a.m. Was very,
not
very,
knowing the schedule.
Very strange. Yeah, that took a long time.
Did you find that was hard on your voice too? Having like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. The early days for sure. Like when you're singing, when you're playing a set before 11 a.m., that's just such a weird thing to do. And but yeah, we got used to it. We could just kind of take any time by the end of it. But yeah.
Any plans to do it next year?
We're not sure at this point.
Yeah.
We don't have anything booked except the tour after this, and that ends December 16th. It's supporting a band called Lower Than Atlantis with Moose Blood as
their headline. Yeah, they're a big band in the UK, aren't
they? Yeah, they do very well. Yeah.
Cool, man. Jeez, man, we're plowing through this. What do you want to talk about?
Not entirely sure. I know so very much about you guys now, which is very, very weird because we all listened to you guys as kids. So now it's just like, now we're just bromies and stuff.
We're bromies.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, we took you guys out on that, English tour. Sorry. It was more European. It was all European.
Yeah.
There was no English dates at all. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
We hit it off right away. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are great. Like, I feel like your band, like the first time I heard your band and I was like, yeah, I really like this. But then when I saw your show and I saw what you were doing, and I saw the way you interacted, I was like, I totally understand what this band is trying to do.
Maybe that's what I'll ask you about, because I remember you saying almost those exact selection of words. And I still to this day don't know like quite what that means. It's like, because you said you got it. And I don't even think we get it. Like, we don't know. We're just, you know, writing music we like and playing a show we enjoy doing.
Well, I don't know. Like, a part of it is I think you're just a natural, too. Like, I don't even know if you know what you're doing. Like, I watched some of those YouTube videos.
Sure.
And, like, just the way your personality is and the way you're talking, it's like you're acting.
Yeah.
It's like it's fake, but it's knowing you that's not fake. It's just
who
you are.
Yeah.
Is that something you ever struggle with? Like it happens with our guitar player, Josh.
Sure.
Like we were on tour with Boy Sets Fire.
Yeah.
And they thought Josh was fucking with them.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I'm like, no, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
And like, does that ever happen with you where like people were like, oh, he's fake. And he's like putting on this like act. And he's like, you know, he's acting like a guy in a fucking, in Five Sauce or whatever.
Yeah. The guys,
that's just who you are.
The guys will always joke as well, because when when I made YouTube videos, like my talking voice got really, really high. And that's just what happens when I'm excited. Like that's kind of what's happening now. But when I'm just talking day to day, just in the van, I talk with like just a low like voice. Like I don't give a shit, but yeah, it like you could argue that sounds very, very fake and like it's put on and mm-hmm. exaggerated or augmented just for entertainment. But it's just when I get excited, I have a weird whiny high voice. But the rest of the time, I don't really. But
I mean, when you're on stage and stuff, like something takes over. I don't know what it is, and like you have a great way of kind of commanding the crowd, and there's no dead air. You know, it's very like very energetic, and like how much do you plan out like what you're going to say on stage? Is there any like, I mean, obviously bands when they make a set list, they'll go, okay, we're going to play these two in a row.
Yep.
And then we'll have a talking break.
Yeah.
And I've seen singers actually script shit like to the point where they'll actually write notes on their set list.
Sure,
or I've even seen full sheets of words.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. But how much of that is for you is like scripted, or how much of it is just like off the cuff?
There's a lot of stuff that is still off the cuff, and there's a lot of stuff that I've learned works. And won't say word for word the same every night, mm-hmm. but you know when to get people jumping, and you know when to command what of a crowd, and what does work and what doesn't work, and therefore you steer clear of that. So it's just kind of, you know, learning the ropes of our set and, you know, when a crowd is feeling it and how to, you know, start to try to get them involved. Like last night in Buffalo was really, really sleepy for the first like four or five songs.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, it was nice and rowdy and, you know.
So what do you do when you come out and it's like, what's up, Buffalo? And everyone's like,
crickets.
We don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially being first of five on this tour. It's,
of course, yeah.
It can be really tough.
Yeah.
So what do you try to do? Just...
Yeah, I think it's about equal parts trying to like command and excite a crowd, but equal parts understanding that not everybody, the majority of the crowd, isn't there for you. So you have to respect if people don't want, like, we're not going to like leave the stage in a strop and get all like pissed off. Like,
yeah.
Why didn't people go apeshit for the first band on this bill? But at the same time, it's very important that we like give it our all and really do try, because, you know, that's what support bands are there for. And, you know, we obviously want to play a great set, a set that we're proud of, but, you know, we're not going to, you know, get like, start doing like a Bissy fit, a Ben Bissy fit.
Oh, are you throwing Ben under the bus now? Is he the diva? See, because this is lead singer.
I won't say this.
This is lead singer syndrome. And generally speaking, you know, guys like you and me, we're the targets.
Yeah.
And in most cases, we really are. They're right in their assumptions,
yeah,
that we are the divas and we are the ones with the, that may throw the hissy fits once in a while, but maybe in your case, it might be the singer guitar player.
Yeah. It isn't always me. It is me.
It's always me.
It'll be me, you know, but it's not always me.
On this tour, you guys are first of five. You got no crew.
Yeah.
Are you guys getting hotel rooms or are you guys sleeping on floors?
We have three hotels booked for the entire like 48 days we're out here. And that's because we couldn't find anybody. And in hindsight, we really just should be sleeping in the van. We did it the other night on the drive to Buffalo. I drove us till 4:30 in the morning and we slept in a Walmart parking lot,
mm-hmm.
Which is what we should be doing instead of these hotels. You know, this is our third US tour and we've met enough people that we didn't have to... you know, pay out or have to sleep in the van. We're sleeping on floors, you know, 99% of the time, which is great.
I thought you just said you're getting hotel rooms.
We have three booked for the.
Three. Okay, I thought you meant three per night.
Oh God, no.
I was like, okay, you booked. Okay,
Now that's when we were really, really stuck.
Okay, and I now
even in hindsight think those were a mistake. We shouldn't have gotten those. But
so okay, so you I mean, there must be some stories from sleeping on some floors. I mean.
Yeah,
it's a crazy life. We did it for Silverstein. We did it for a lot of years too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got any stories? What's the most recent?
We stayed in. This was back in either February or March on the Glamour Kills tour. We were touring the States with a band called Rome. It was 12 of us in a 15-seater, and we stayed at this horrible, horrible house in Denver. That was just filthy. There was dirt and dust everywhere. Just in, I went to use the toilet and just there was dirt in the bathtub, just dirt and shoes. And it was really, really gross. And we were about to go to bed and we said, we can't actually find the light switch. How do we turn this light off? They're like, we moved in 3 weeks ago and we haven't found it. So the light's just been on for 3 weeks. And like these people were just so very bizarre, so very, very strange. And this house was gross. It was filthy. And I woke up on a Band-Aid and it was a terrible, terrible time.
You slept with the light on because you couldn't figure out how
to turn it off. No, we got like a towel or a hoodie and unscrewed it.
But it was
the first time that room had been dark in 3 weeks, apparently. These people were just like, we just don't give a shit.
Wow.
That was kind of gross.
My favorite story is... We were kind of past the point of staying on people's floors.
Uh-huh.
And we generally were getting like hotel rooms and stuff. And we played a show in Prince Edward Island, Canada, which is like a remote island. I don't know if you know where it is.
It's like, I don't.
It's like you have to take this 50-kilometer long bridge to get there. And it's its own province, but there's like hardly anyone lives there. So we're there. We had a great show and... The hotels are like kind of expensive in Canada. And I was like, you know what? For old time's sake, we should just sleep on someone's floor. Like they're gonna. So we go to this this house and it was kind of like a student house.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were like, yeah, you know, like stay up and drink. And most of us were kind of tired. I was like, I'll have a beer, but not really. And a few people were like, fuck this, I'm getting out of here. It's dirty in here. I'm sleeping in the van. So I'm sleeping on the floor and I go to bed and all of a sudden these like girls come in and they're like, nah, 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 like it's being so loud and they're making all this noise in the kitchen. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So then all of a sudden they're just like, start smashing all the food, like having a food fight in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Smashing bananas on the ground. There's like food everywhere. And like, what am I going to do? It's not my house. I'm not going to get up and be like, hey, can you keep it down?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know what's wrong with these girls. So anyways, I go to sleep, close my eyes. And in the middle of the night, I feel like this, like kind of like someone licking, like it feels like someone's licking my face.
Yeah.
So the first thing I think of is like, oh my God, are these girls like fucking with us now? It's like first thing I think of. So I open my eyes and there's no one there. I'm like, that's weird. Really fucking weird. So I go back to sleep and I feel it again and I wake up and I see a bat fly across the room.
I expected you to say like a dog or something.
A bat.
What the fuck?
And I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. So I went and I slept in the van. Found a spot. It was full, but I found like a little wedged myself in the between the wheel wells or something.
Shit.
And then in the morning I got up and I was like, you're not gonna believe what happened. They're like, you're not gonna believe what happened. I was like, what? It's like, there was a bat in the fish tank and we liberated it. We saved its life. It was gonna die. It was gonna drown. It like was flapping in the top, like you know, between like the water is.
Uh huh.
It was gonna die and we saved its life. It's like, well, but that's my, like, the bat. So they thought that I had thrown, like, put the bat in the in the aquarium.
Oh, so
I was like, oh, well, I must have scared it, and it must have crash landed into the aquarium. But what we still don't understand is the aquarium was covered.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But that was officially the last time I ever slept on somebody's floor.
That is so very bizarre. You've also just reminded me, like when we played a show in Eindhoven in the Netherlands, and we went to stay at this girl's house, and we climbed up these stairs in this dark room, and discovered that she lived above an orthodontist, and we just got into this place, and there's just like dentist surgery gear everywhere, and all these gas masks. It was really, really weird and creepy. Then we ascended even further. And then she had this bunny that just roamed around like a cat or a dog.
Yeah.
And it ate through my phone charger in the night. And I was just quite glad it didn't die. Like it didn't get like shocked and like, but it was, yeah, it was a bit weird.
Yeah.
That was quite weird.
The only other one I have, I had a rat crawl across my face when I was sleeping on Will from Aiden. I was sleeping at his house, Will from Aiden's floor. And he lived in like a basement apartment in Seattle. And I had a rat crawl across my face. That was worse than the bat.
That's pretty bad.
Rats and bats. Well, hey, man, thanks for your time, dude.
Of course, anytime, man.
I guess plug the record and tell people what you guys are up to.
Yeah. So our debut record, Never Happy Ever After, is out now. And yeah, we're currently on tour supporting Mayday Parade, the Real Friends in This Wildlife on the AP tour. And yeah, we will hopefully be back in North America sometime soon, but... Yeah, it's nice to be back. This is our second ever.
People are going to get this in England too, and maybe Europe. And
yeah.
So
we'll
be. You got a tour coming up with Laura within Atlantis.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the biggest rooms we played in the UK too. We're playing the Roundhouse in Camden, which is going to be
awesome.
Very, very cool and surreal for us. And it's all we've got booked for now. Just enjoying it.
Well, thank you very much, Patty. It's
anytime,
fantastic.
Man. Of course.
So yes, I didn't love revisiting the story of rats crawling across my face and bats landing on my face, but they are indeed true tour stories of sleeping on floors, so maybe sometime we'll have an all-tour story episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. Anyways, thank you so much again for joining us. Patty was great. Next week we have an even better show than this one, if you can believe it. So please tune in every Monday, subscribe, get on the RSS feed, whatever it is you do, if you use Overcast or Stitcher or even just the regular old podcast app on your iPhone. It's all good. So thanks a lot. I'm going to leave you with my favorite As It Is song. Actually, they just released a new video for this one. It's called Speak Soft. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.
Why should I stick around when all I do is let you